Trees are sinister shadows, and the moon is snatching at my hair, and I have to squeeze my eyes shut against the sheer terror. Don't look back. Don't look back. Don't look back. Next thing I know, I'm plowing into the Dunkin' Donuts, where my new friends are staring at me. Call the police! Call the police! Call the police! I scream at Charity, which she does. Except I don't remember the rest. I'm crying too hard, my mind a wreck of then and now, what was and what is, what will never be again. Eventually, Lotham bursts through the door. He takes one look at my devastated face and pulls me into his arms. Paul, I sob hysterically against his chest. He lets me collapse against him and holds me as I weep. Chapter 20. I sit in a booth at Stoney's. On the table in front of me, a mug of coffee, a glass of water, and a giant box of munchkins that Charity shoved into my hands as I was leaving. The box is open. I've managed to eat two, which explains the powdered sugar on my fingers, lips, and cheek. Lotham disappeared long enough to retrieve a damp washcloth. Now, he uses it to wipe gingerly at my snot and tear-stained face. I don't make a move to stop him or assist. My brain has short-circuited. My heart has exploded in my chest. That nothing actually happened to me is the least of my worries. Coffee. Lotham orders. I lift the mug, take a sip. Sugar. He provides a chocolate munchkin. I chew obediently. Water. I move on to the glass. Repeat. So I do. Two, three, four more times, till my coffee mug is dry and the water is gone, and a suspicious number of donuts is missing as well. Judging by the smear of red jam at the corner of Lotham's mouth, I'm not the only one using pastries to self-medicate. Start at the beginning. I try. I'm not really sure what there is to say. I met with Mrs. Somdy. I asked her a variety of questions about her daughter, Livia, most of which she couldn't answer, meaning I basically learned what Detective Lotham had surmised the day before. Livia's family wasn't exactly the loving sort.
She ordered you to leave,
he repeats now. Someone arrived. At the front, I could hear a commotion. I never saw who, but Mrs. Somdy's demeanor changed. She shoved me out the back. She said, I draw a shaky breath. She said the house wasn't safe for girls. She told me if I found her daughter, not to bring her home.
Why isn't their house safe for girls?
I don't know.
The son, JJ.
Johnson. Lotham arches a brow. You should call him that. I insist, really pisses him off. Apparently, you can't score any street cred as a Johnson.
Definitely not.
But she also implied he wouldn't hurt his sister. Family doesn't go after family. Someone else, I'm guessing one of Johnson's acquaintances. Bosses? I don't know. Higher on the criminal food chain.
Okay, so Mrs. Somdy shoves you out the rear door. You take off and they...
I didn't see.
Give chase. And fire a gun?
I heard gunshots, but I didn't stop to look. Firing at me, firing at someone else firing at them, firing at me. Your guess is as good as mine.
And guess is as good as we got.
Lotham grumbles.
Uniforms already canvassed the area. As the saying goes, nobody saw nothing. On that block, that's how it goes. Crime techs recovered a fresh slug from the side of a porch probably 2 feet from where you passed. Trajectory indicates it didn't come from behind you, however, but from across the street.
Oh, goody. So it was one of the neighbors who wanted me dead.
First time being shot at, Frankie?
No.
Want to talk about it?
No.
Want to drink?
Is it a day ending in Y?
Hell yes. Then talking is what you get to do instead. I have to smile. Man is smart, his manipulation well played. But I'm not going to talk to him about my meltdown, or PTSD, or whatever you want to call it. It's too personal. And maybe, all these years later, still too intimate. It belongs to Paul and me, to talk about it with anyone else. I will call his number, listen to it ring, the click of him picking up, the reassuring sound of his breathing, syncing with my own. My heartbeat, his heartbeat, intertwined. Then a woman's voice. You need to stop this. You need help. Don't we all? I get up from the booth, head to the kitchen for more coffee. I'm already so caffeinated, I teeter on the edge of nausea. Ironically, this is not when I'm most at risk for falling off the wagon. I'm too exhausted to self-destruct. If I finally pour that drink I've been craving for 9 fucking years, trust me, I plan on remembering it. When I turn around, Lotham is standing behind me in the kitchen. He takes the mug from my violently trembling hand and leads me back to the booth. Talk to me, he says. I don't think Livia and Angelique meant to be friends. Okay. I think something else brought them together. Neither one of them enrolled in fashion camp because they were that into fashion. Angelique's a future doctor who likes to sketch. Livia, apparently, is a sneaky survivor with a penchant for making things. But then Angelique's bestie bailed on her for a basketball player, and Livia never had a friend to start with. So you have 2 lone girls, both quiet, but smart. Maybe they simply sat side by side for a bit. I don't know. I think they became friends in spite of themselves.
Yet never mentioned each other's names to their families.
Livia doesn't have that kind of family. As for Angelique, I hesitate, glance at the detective. In the beginning, I thought Angelique kept Livia to herself so as to not alienate her other friends. But given how connected Angelique and Livia must have become, for both of them to have now gone missing, what if we were right in the beginning? Angelique did fall in love. It just wasn't with a boy.
You think she and Livia were dating?
It would explain the secrecy. At 15, trying to figure out who they are, how they identify. Livia with her fucked up family. Angelique with her much more traditional one. I shrug. None of this stuff is easy. But clearly there's a connection between the two girls. And yet, as you say, Angelique never mentioned Livia's name to anyone. In her world, that's a pretty big omission.
Unless Livia got her involved in something criminal.
You really think Angelique wouldn't talk to Marjolie and Kira about illegal activities? Please. Best buds are by definition co-conspirators. No, this level of secrecy smacks of something more personal. Lotham nods slowly.
All right. But even if we assume Angelique and Livia's relationship was intimate, it still doesn't explain how both wound up missing, 3 months apart, let alone why Angelique had thousands of dollars, including counterfeit hundreds, stashed in a ceramic lamp.
Details, details, I mutter. But the detective does have a point. Let's back up for a moment. What do we know about each girl? They both live in Mattapan, but they didn't attend the same high school, meaning they probably met for the first time at fashion camp. Angelique was there due to her interest in art, while Livia liked to make things. Both come from very different family backgrounds. Both, apparently, are good at keeping secrets. Lotham nods. His hand remains next to mine on the table. Now, he idly rubs my thumb. I'm not sure he knows he's doing it, but I don't move, and he doesn't stop.
What kind of things did Livia make?
He asks. Her mom talked about a plastic jack-o'-lantern that Livia brought home from school. Eyes cut out, whole nine yards. Though I have no idea what kind of class teaches plastic pumpkins.
Livia attended a trade school. I was talking to her guidance counselor when I got the report of shots fired. Livia had courses in basic construction, metalwork, and some computer design class. I don't remember anything involving plastic.
Wait. Lotham pulls his hand away, snaps his fingers.
Her computer design course. They have a 3D printer. That would do it. Maybe for Halloween. Design and print your own jack-o'-lantern.
Counterfeit money, I murmur. Any way you can get from design and print pumpkins to design and print U.S. currency?
Absolutely not. Remember that whole spiel on counterfeiting being a very sophisticated operation, involving printing presses, master tradespeople, and extremely rare and specialized inks?
Yeah, it's coming back to me now. But still.
We have two missing girls with at least a personal connection, not to mention complementary skill sets in art and design.
Lotham shakes his head.
Honest to God, the more I learn in this case, the less anything makes sense. But having said that, I think we should return to Livia's school, determine exactly what kind of mad skills she had, not to mention if she ever had Angelique with her in the classroom after hours. The fake bills have to mean something, though I'll be damned if I know what.
We are going to visit Livia's school?
In the interest of public safety, I think I should keep you close. Can't have too many shootings in one day.
He says the words lightly, but he's tossing me a bone and we both know it. I'd like to say it's all due to the power of my charm, but more likely, it's pity. Beggars can't be choosers, so I don't argue. I push slowly out of the booth, a final chug of coffee, a last cinnamon sugar munchkin. My hands are still shaking from the morning's misadventure. My stomach has a hollow, sick feel. But my job is my job. And given all the past mistakes I can't change, thank God I still have this. I rise to standing.
Lotham slings on his blue sports coat and leads me out the door. Chapter 21. Mr. Riddenscale is Livia's AutoCAD teacher at Boston Polytech. A tall white guy, he has a lanky build and an absent-minded expression. He's dressed casually in worn jeans, a thin t-shirt topped by work flannel, and battered boots. A spoon and a fork protrude from the top of his right boot, but he doesn't appear to notice. He moves across the room, dodging workstations with quick efficiency born of practice, as he leads us to the front. He doesn't seem all that concerned to have a police detective and associate appear in his classroom during lunch hour. A very been-there-done-that sort of dude.
Yes, I know Livia Somdy.
He nods as he reaches his desk, pulls open a drawer, and takes out a metal lunchbox that looks straight out of the 1950s.
Did she make a plastic pumpkin in the course of your class?
Lotham asks him, his gold badge clearly on display.
Sure, that's a traditional fall assignment. How would you describe her?
Good student, solid, but I have a feeling that's not why you were asking these questions.
When did you last see her?
January. I reported her absence to the administration, if that's what you're asking for.
No judgment here,
Lotham says, which is great because I'm full of judgment. How did you not worry about her? How did you not reach out in any way possible to this teenager who clearly needed you? Having seen firsthand the conditions of Livia's house, the dealings of her family?
Describe her as a student,
Lotham again. Riddenscale pauses in the act of unwrapping his sandwich, obediently considering the matter.
She had a natural aptitude for picturing things in an XYZ plane. Can't say the same for too many of my kids. But she was a good student?
Excellent, but also quiet. She wasn't one to speak up or help out her fellow classmates. I describe her as a sleeper student. I raise my hand, unable to help myself. Classroom, conditioned response. What does that mean? Mr. Riddenscale turns toward me. She had a natural aptitude, but she existed in her own self-contained bubble. She knew what she knew, did what she did, then moved on.
Detective Lotham.
How adept was she? Oh, I would describe her as one of my best students.
Mr. Riddenscale hesitates.
Look, I work with a lot of at-risk kids. For many of them, discovering the right trade represents their ticket out, meaning once they find the right fit, they go all in. Bond with me, work with their classmates, log extra hours. These kids, you wouldn't believe the talent. Give them the opportunity, and man, oh man. Livia Somdy, on the other hand. I tried to engage her on multiple occasions, give her special assignments to build her confidence. But in the end, she wasn't taking the bait. And, yeah, I was concerned by that.
Detective Lotham.
She ever talk about her family?
Mr. Riddenscale shakes his head. Me. What about friends?
Couldn't give you a single name. She was a loner, at least in my class. Did she stay after school?
Lotham again.
Spend extra time in your class? I'd pushed her to enter a Skills USA technical drafting competition in the spring, which required preparation. So, yes, she often logged time here after school. I'd say several days a week. At least, you know, till she went missing.
My turn. Did you ever see anyone waiting for her? Or maybe she brought a friend with her to your classroom while she worked? Mr. Riddenscale gives us both a look.
Never. Tell us about this competition.
Lotham orders.
Livia's specialty was designing plastic molds for the manufacturing of thermoplastic materials, basically using 3D printing to help create replacement parts. Think of it this way. In various manufacturing processes, say your average laptop computer, dozens of the component parts are plastic. The ability to design the right part or create a mold for the ongoing manufacturing of such parts is highly valuable. Livia had a mind for such things. She could naturally picture what made something work. Better yet, she could see how each piece worked within the whole. From there, it was easy enough for her to design the necessary part, or, on a great day, design a whole new setup that dramatically improved the operational whole. Like I said, she's crazy talented. Can you show us an example of her projects?
Lotham asks.
I nod vigorously, because so far, I can't picture any of this.
Then again, science was never my strong suit. Didn't she use one of your computers? I add.
Sure, but you're talking last year. I don't have her work saved on the computers anymore.
Then again, Mr. Riddenscale taps his nose thoughtfully. I didn't clean out her drawer.
That should still have some of her drawings, not to mention smaller samples of her work.
Lunch forgotten, he leads the way over to a huge metal cabinet. The doors open to reveal a series of shallow drawers. Bending all the way down, Riddenscale pulls out several large sheets of design paper, followed by what appear to be several plastic thingamajigs. Lotham takes the drawings. I explore the thingamajigs. A cube that has movable sides, a series of spirals that spin here, spin there. The items are fashioned from plain white plastic and rough to the touch, clearly prototypes of something. But the fact that I can work the cube and play with the spirals is fascinating to me.
She was 15, I ask incredulously. Because this is way beyond me as a functional adult, let alone the drunk teen I used to be. Ah, yes, Livia's specially designed fidget gadgets. The pumpkin assignment for her was fun, but hardly a challenge. Most kids spent a week on it, whereas Livia designed her jack-o'-lantern in a single day, then designed two of those with the time left over. Several of her fellow students expressed interest, but like I said, she wasn't one to share.
Because I just can't help myself, I raise my hand again. Clearly, Livia had mad skills, which meant she also had a way out of her impoverished, drug-dealing, crime-ridden family life. Her education combined with her natural ability, the sky should have been the limit. So what went wrong? Why wasn't she still at school, perfecting more pumpkins and fidget doohickeys and manufacturing molds while preparing to launch the next great exciting chapter of her life? And how did it involve Angelique? This was easy for her, I ask, holding up the fidget gadgets. As in, totally natural?
Absolutely.
And she could make plastic molds for manufacturing? Something like that?
Sure, rudimentary ones, but she was only going to get better, especially given her gift for total system overview, how one part related to the next. That kind of process perspective I can't teach. You get it, or you don't.
Beside me, Lotham nods.
She ever play around with, I don't know, plastic stamps of images, flowers, U.S. Treasury symbols, whatever.
Mr. Riddenscale taps his nose again.
No. But she had the ability. Could have even been working on some side projects at home. Ability, yes. Side projects? No. Whatever work Livia did was performed here. The design software is licensed. The kids can't access it on their own computers, let alone for any of these products.
He nods toward the plastic chunks in my hand.
You need a 3D printer. Again, not the kind of thing Livia would have at home. And you knew every project your kids worked on?
Lotham presses, while I stare at the spirals in my hand and digest this latest statement.
3D printing isn't cheap. Of course, I monitor it. Have you seen our school budget? Plus, my job is to review my students' drawings over and over again. You only want to print when you're absolutely ready. Otherwise, it wastes time and materials. Have you seen a 3D printer, detective?
Lotham shakes his head. Without another word, Mr. Riddenscale turns and leads us to a side door in the classroom, which opens to a smaller room dominated by a large, fully enclosed glass box with all sorts of mechanical parts in the middle. It looks to weigh a ton and cost a fortune, which I guess goes to Mr. Riddenscale's point that it's not the sort of thing any teenager is going to have at home.
This is the U-print, he says.
Can't you print a plastic gun? I ask, because thinking of Livia's family and my own recent encounter with them, this strikes me as a highly valued commodity.
Can you fashion a plastic gun? Yes. Do we do that here? No.
Mr. Riddenscale sounds firm on the subject. But it would be highly valuable, I press, particularly in this neighborhood.
No.
Lotham raises a brow at the reply, causing Mr. Riddenscale to elaborate.
Most plastic guns are good for a single shot, and given the lack of rifling on the barrel, it has to be up close and personal. Now, if you needed to sneak a gun through security, either at an airport, courthouse, for a Jason Bourne kind of deal, okay. But I know my kids' lives, and no gangbanger wants a small single-shot pistol. They want firepower. The bigger, the better. Nothing made here is going to be impressive enough for their needs. Plus, most of the drug dealers out there, just because they can pull the trigger, doesn't mean they can aim. Hence their love of automatic rifles. Plastic guns are a finesse tool. Around here?
Mr. Riddenscale shrugs.
That's not what's needed.
Lotham nods shortly. It does make a crazy kind of sense, but also leads us back where we started. Livia had talent involving complex design and this enormous 3D printer. Which translates to what? Plastic molds to assist in counterfeiting money? Except that's only a tiny step of a highly involved and elaborate process. Let alone, what kind of European counterfeiting ring is going to recruit a 15-year-old girl from inner city Boston? And yet, Angelique had counterfeit hundreds while also having a relationship intimate or otherwise, with Livia. Angelique disappeared, and 3 months later, Livia went missing. The girls were connected. The money was connected, which made it stand to reason that all of this, Livia's skills, Angelique's ambitions, also had to be connected. Except how?
Are there other teachers or classes Livia mentioned?
Lotham asks now.
A shrug. You can check with Mr. Jones, the school guidance counselor. She might know more.
Lotham nods. He'd mentioned talking to a school counselor earlier this morning, so I'm guessing he's already covered those bases. Anyone seem rattled or particularly bothered when Livia stopped coming to school? I speak up. Mr. Riddenscale shakes his head.
Which is a shame. She was a good kid. I'm sorry I can't be of more help.
There doesn't seem to be much more to say or do. Lotham shakes the teacher's hand. I follow suit. Then we're once more in the hallway.
Where does this leave us? I grumble out loud.
Lotham frowns, purses his lips.
I don't know, he says at last.
Livia's and Angelique's disappearances have to be related.
I don't believe in that big a coincidence,
Lotham agrees. The cash in Angelique's lamp, the burner phones. The girls were up to something that put them in contact with fake currency while helping them earn real dough. Something that clearly got them in trouble, leading to Angelique's disappearance, then Livia's. Except, why the vanishing act 3 months apart? Help us, Angelique's note said. Meaning they're together now and in even more danger 11 months later, held against their will? By whom? How? Suddenly, I stop walking. I grab Lotham's hand. The footage. Angelique's last day of school. All the cameras that don't show Angelique exiting the school or walking down the street. Lotham regards me quizzically. You didn't know about Livia then. You watched all those video frames looking for Angelique. This whole case back then was about one missing girl, one disappearance. But knowing what we know now?
Lotham comes to a dead halt as well. We gotta watch those tapes again.
I smile. We should absolutely do that, I say, with just the barest emphasis on we. He doesn't deny me. Together, we rush out the door. Chapter 22. Lotham is the dedicated workaholic detective I suspected him to be. He doesn't take me to some evidence lab or special counter-surveillance expert. He drives us to the BPD field office in Mattapan. District B3, the blue sign reads, perched outside a fairly new-looking brick structure. It has a towering front facade that reminds me of Angelique's high school. Apparently, New England architecture is all about first appearances. Inside the station, things are a bit more TV cop show. The drop ceiling, cheap flooring, security desk. Lotham waves at the front desk sergeant, having me sign in, while not offering an explanation. The female officer, older with a hawkish face, looks bored, but I'm wide-eyed. My last few investigative gigs have involved places where the local police outpost was barely more than a double wide. In comparison, this is swanky. Boston fucking PD for sure. Lotham weaves his way down the hall, up the stairs. Once more, my job is to scamper behind him. I catch a glimpse of walls covered with most wanted photos juxtaposed with tributes to officers fallen in the line of duty. I don't get to study any of it, as I quicken my pace to keep up with a boxer on a mission. When we finally arrive at Lotham's workspace, it turns out to be a desk in an open bullpen. The low walls of the cubicle bear everything from a few tucked away photos of beaming school kids, his nieces and nephews, I would guess, to various police agency patches, to several framed Muhammad Ali quotes. Angelique's missing poster is pinned up in one corner, right where he'd see it every time he sat down in front of his computer. He doesn't comment, and neither do I. But I have a curious flushed sensation. I was right. He is who I thought he would be, which is much more than I can say for most people. Lotham fires his desktop to life. He disappears briefly, returns with two plastic cups of water. Then he snags a desk chair from the unoccupied cubicle behind him and drags it over. He doesn't speak, just gestures. I take a seat, pick up my water, watch his fingertips fly across his keyboard. I have only limited technical skills, but befitting a big city detective, Lotham appears just as at home in front of a computer as he does out on the streets. Next thing I know, he's shoving back his chair while gesturing me closer.
First and best camera angle, he states, taken from the corner grocer across the street. You'll see all the kids exit at end of day Friday, November 5th, day of Angelique's disappearance.
I nod and focus on the screen as he hits play. I don't get to hear the school bell as the video offers images only, but I can pretty much fill in the audio as on the screen bodies start pouring out of the doors and down the steps. It's a fluid mass of teenage humanity, almost all of it African-American and clad in the same uniform of jeans, hoodies, flannel shirts. In the end, it's not Angelique I spy first, but her curvy friend, Marjolie, which leads to Kira, and then, following shortly behind her, Angelique. The girl is wearing denim leggings with an oversized sweater in deep red. She has a bright-colored knit scarf wrapped tight around her neck, thin black gloves on her hands, and untied duck boots on her feet. Her navy blue backpack is slung over one shoulder. The weather is sunny, but clearly cold. Lotham taps the screen, in case I missed our target. I nod to let him know I see her. As we watch, she and her besties grow slightly larger, walking across the street toward the corner grocer. Then they disappear from view. After school snack, I mutter. Or drink, as it might have been in my case. Lotham hits arrows. The video fast forwards. Now we see all three girls reappear. There appears to be laughing, hugging. One dark head peels away. Taller, so I'm guessing Kira. That leaves Marjolie and Angelique. Marjolie must return inside the store as she simply disappears from the frame. But Angelique appears more fully, crossing the street toward her school. She doesn't head for the front steps, however, but disappears, backpack slung over her shoulder as she strides down the long right side of the brick building toward the infamous bolt hole and side door where she vanishes completely. It's a disconcerting feeling. A girl, there, with her friends and favorite scarf and school bag, then gone. Until she reappears at a cyber cafe 11 months later. I want to reach out and touch her image on the screen. I wonder if her family still does the same, strokes the framed photo of her smiling cheek before heading to bed each night. Places two fingers against her matte lips upon waking again each morning. How can a person go from being so present, so alive, to vanished without a trace? I focus my attention back on the screen. I try to think past the image to the Angelique I now know, a smart, serious student, a caretaker for her brother, her aunt, her mom back home. In her brother's words, not a dreamer, but a planner. What I notice now is how she walks. Straight, direct, not a trace of uncertainty. Angelique didn't wander down the side of the building to whatever would happen next. She strode purposefully forward. A girl on a mission. What the hell are you doing, Angelique? I mutter. Lotham nods slightly. He's asked the same question a million times. He hits stop. I can already tell you how this video ends, without any more sign of Angelique. which brings us to half a dozen more cameras, including traffic cams at each major intersection, none of which shows her either. From what I can tell, neither of Angelique's friends re-entered the school after her. It appears that Kira heads off to the left, while Marjolie spends more time in the little grocer. Actually, in a matter of minutes, Marjolie heads down the block in the opposite direction of the school to the bus stop Angelique normally uses. I traced her route back home utilizing various video feeds, Kira as well. Both go from here to various buses to their individual residences. I nod, impressed. That must have taken no shortage of time to sort out, given all the cameras involved. But it's also good info to have. Whatever happened next didn't involve Angelique's best friends. Which leaves us with... All right. So we know where Angelique goes, down the side of the school. We know where Kira and Marjolie head, home. Which brings us to new friend, associate, something, Livia Somdi. What about her? Lotham obediently rewinds the Deli Mart footage. Once again, students pour down the front steps into the broad city street. This time, I keep my eyes out for a red hat. I don't know Livia's features much more than that. Lotham rewinds six more times. We devise a system. I stare at the upper left quadrant while he does lower right. We work our way toward each other. The end result? No red baseball cap. No Livia Somdi. I sip more water, rub my eyes. Lotham closes out that video, loads up the next. This is from the traffic cam on the intersection to the west of the school. I nod, grateful I don't have to work tonight, as apparently there's enough footage here to last at least a week. How did you go through this the first time? I mutter.
Painfully. Our video tech also ran facial recognition software against it, though given the number of kids and how few gaze directly at the camera, that was a low probability play.
Leave no stone unturned, I murmur. He agrees. The traffic surveillance starts a minute before the end of day exodus. I watch a couple of cars pass through the intersection. Then, there's a sense of movement at the edge of the camera, the students descending. Then, individual shapes become clear as dozens of students trudge toward the intersection, headed for bus stops, whatever. None are Angelique or her friends, which makes sense as we already know they're at the grocery across the street. I study the faces anyway, looking not just for Livia Somdi, but anyone who might suddenly strike a spark of inspiration or magically answer our millions of questions. Nothing. We watch this video for a solid 15 minutes, until the last of the kids have disappeared and only cars zoom into the camera's field of view. I yawn, cracking my jaw, as if that will get my eyes to focus again. Honestly, this is tedious work.
Next camera?
Lotham asks. Next camera. Repeat and repeat. I earn new respect for Boston detectives. This is draining work, and I still can't be sure I'm not missing something. With so much to see on a busy city street, it's hard to know where to look, let alone to sustain focus. Lotham switches up videos. He must have downloaded all these feeds to his computer months ago, where he could watch them again and again, deep into the night, searching, searching, searching. We break the screen into quadrants again, as that seems the most scientific approach. We study, stare, grunt, groan. No luck. An hour later, we both shove back our chairs and rub our eyes. This is pissing me off, I say.
Welcome to my world.
I was so sure Livia was the missing link. Knowing about her involvement now, you'd load up these videos, we'd spy her hat, her face, something, and kapow, all the pieces of the puzzle would fall into place.
Kapow?
I like a little drama in my narrative. I rub the bridge of my nose. My stomach growls. I'm starving.
Lotham must be as well, but I can tell from his face he's not ready to take a break any more than I am. We want something to show for all this effort. It's human nature.
Let's talk it through, he says. What do we know from the footage?
Angelique definitely heads down the side of the school to the emergency exit and hidden bolt hole. Marjolie and Kira don't. Lotham nods, laces his fingers behind his head, and stretches out his shoulders.
Our assumption has been that Angelique re-enters the school via the side exit. So if Marjolie and Kira are headed home, as we know they did, who opens the door?
I sigh heavily. I asked about it being left propped open. Apparently, the school is wise to that trick and monitors the door. So the kids use an inside man. Only person I can think of is Livia Somdi. Angelique's brother goes to the middle school, right?
Yep.
So it can't be him. Lotham swivels his chair to face me.
Livia isn't a student, so how would she get into the school?
After hours? I begin.
Can't. Front doors are locked and monitored. Students have to show their ID if they want to re-enter. Welcome to today's school security.
I frown, chew on my bottom lip. What about during school hours? It hits me. What I'd witnessed myself without really noticing. After lunch, I speak up excitedly. The mass exodus from the deli mart back into the school. With all the kids headed inside at once and rushing to make it before the final bell, even the best security guards are probably looking more at backpacks and security screening than at individual faces. And Livia is a high schooler. It would be easy for her to blend in. Lotham lowers his arms, pulls his chair back up to the driver's position in front of his monitor.
I have 24 hours of surveillance on this tape. Let's check it out.
It takes a bit to find lunchtime, where, again, the exodus of kids from school to sidewalk to across the street is eerily familiar. 30 minutes pass. Then, just like that, kids appear again, clogging the street as they trudge back to school. I keep my eye out for Angelique and her friends. Sure enough. There. Lotham nods, having spotted her. Being only a few hours earlier in the day, she's wearing the same sweater and scarf, walking between Marjolie and Kira. They all appear to be chattering away, paying no particular attention to anything. But then, just as they hit the sidewalk in front of the school, Angelique pauses. Angelique looks back. And there, on the lower edge of the video, a red hat comes into view. We watch in total silence as Livia Somdi crosses the street, clad in ripped jeans and a gray hoodie. Angelique and her friends are already climbing up the stairs to the front door. Angelique doesn't glance behind again, but I know she knows Livia is there. It's in the rigid line of her posture. The way she keeps commanding her friends' attention, keeping them focused ahead as well. Angelique, Kira, and Marjolie disappear inside the glass school doors. Then, a few minutes later, Livia follows behind them, a blue pack slung over her shoulder that looks suspiciously close to Angelique's. Lotham rocks back in his chair.
I'll be damned.
I think I know what happened. I whisper.
No shit, Sherlock.
Without another word, Lotham loads a fresh video, the traffic cam from the closest intersection. He finds the end of school day flood, then advances. 5, 10, 15 minutes. Pauses. Glances at me. Hits play. It takes several more minutes. Then, amid the now random pedestrian traffic, a new form appears from the side of the school, walking straight toward the intersection, head down, red cap plainly visible, ripped jeans, gray hoodie, blue backpack. But looking closer, I can see the hat now sits awkwardly, because the mass of hair underneath is considerably bigger. Angelique's curls, stuffed beneath the brim. Not to mention the distinct gait, direct, purposeful, determined. Angelique's.
Angelique changed clothes with Livia Somdi.
Lotham murmurs. His fingers dance across the keyboard. Other videos appear, disappear, but none improve our view. That would explain why Angelique wasn't missing any clothes. She put on Livia's clothes. But why? Lotham doesn't answer. Instead, he returns to the corner grocer camera, except now 20 minutes after the end of the school day. 5 minutes after Angelique, dressed as Livia, appears and disappears from the frame, a new female emerges from the side of the school. She moves totally differently than Angelique, hesitant, self-conscious, almost skulking as she hugs the inside edge of the sidewalk. Livia Somdi, now dressed in black stretch pants and a navy flannel shirt. Her shorter hair is held back with clips, and for the first time, I can see her face. She appears younger than her 15 years. A pause at the intersection, waiting for her turn to cross. She glances up, a single heartbeat, where she stares directly at the video camera. She looks terrified. Then she crosses the street and disappears from view. Lotham hits stop. He once again pushes back his chair.
Fuck me, he states.
For a change, I don't go with the obvious retort. Angelique took Livia's place. The clothes, the hat. She's not trying to hide herself. She's trying to appear as Livia Somdi. Lotham sighs, scrubs his face with his hand.
I've been working the wrong damn missing persons case.
I get it then. The full implication of Angelique's deception, her and Livia's plan. Serious, hardworking, caretaker Angelique. She didn't engage in high-risk behavior or lifestyle choices, which had made her disappearance such a puzzle. Because she hadn't been the one in danger. She hadn't been the target. Livia Somdi had been. And now, she was gone too. The girl with a gift for visualizing XYZ planes. The girl who lived with a known drug dealer. The girl who clearly feared for her life.
What the hell were they up to? I ask quietly. But neither one of us has the answer.
Chapter 23. I'm at my best when I'm busy. After leaving Detective Lotham, I head back to Stoney's. The pub is up and running with the regulars, tables half full, noise half volume. It's only been a matter of days, but it still feels strange not to take up position behind the bar. I drift up to my studio apartment, where I discover that Piper has abandoned me for the night. Given it's my night off, I could catch up on sleep. Or finally tend to household tasks such as laundry and grocery shopping. Instead, I do the sensible thing. I attend a meeting. Given the earlier hour, I'm surprised, but not unhappy, to discover Charlie also there. I take the empty seat beside him, sipping on coffee as we run through introductions, then get down to business. This meeting is about the 12 steps, step 9 in particular. Making amends. I've never gone through all 12 steps. It's not the apologizing for the wrongs I've done. I get that completely. It's cataloging all my sins that has me hung up. For all my talk of honesty, there's only so much scrutiny I can handle. Though asking for forgiveness is also an issue. How do you apologize to the dead? I get through the meeting, content to once again be in the company of like minds, even if the topic isn't my favorite. I help Charlie clean up after the meeting, working in companionable silence. Then, almost in sync, "Would you like to grab a cup of coffee?" AA speak for "Would you like to talk?" We smile in unison. "Yes." I follow him from the church basement into the fall-tinged night. He seems to know where he's going, so I don't worry about it as we weave from block to block. Finally, we arrive at a tiny little diner I never would have found on my own. When Charlie walks in, with his telltale bulk and army jacket, he's clearly recognized and greeted as a friend. I earn a glance or two from the staff, but his welcome expands to include me. I smile openly, happy for friendly faces after my morning adventures. Charlie takes a seat near the back. He doesn't even have to ask before a mug of rich, dark coffee is set before him. I nod, I'll take the same. I still haven't eaten, so I ask for a menu. Charlie says he's fine. After a brief contemplation, I go with the Greek salad, which makes me think of Lotham and other things I don't want to consider. My salad arrives in a matter of minutes, given we're the only two customers around. I dig in, munching happily on romaine lettuce and Kalamata olives while Charlie sips his coffee. Thank you for yesterday, I say finally. Charlie's sighting of Angelique Badeau at the wireless store. His personal request for me at the scene. His tidbit on Livia Somdi also having disappeared.
Any news?
He asks. Nothing tangible yet. I visited Mrs. Somdi this morning. I hesitate, not sure what to say.
There by the grace of God go I,
Charlie intones. I nod vigorously, and we lapse into silence, weighted by the shared horror of that one single drink that can undo our hours, months, years of hard work. There's no judgment in AA, only mutual fear. I tried to get her to leave with me. I venture at last. Join me in attending a meeting.
Can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped.
I nod, chewing slowly. Her house. Her son. I don't know if I could do it in those conditions.
For the longest time, Charlie says, I figured I couldn't get clean, not living on the streets. But then, later, I wondered if homelessness wasn't easier, took all the responsibility, the agitation of daily life away. Mad, sad, or glad, we don't need a reason to drink. It's just easier to blame it on something else.
I nod. He's right. Mrs. Somdi's living conditions are deplorable, but not impossible. AA teaches us that our worst enemy lives not outside the gates, but inside our souls. We need no excuses to drink. As long as we have air in our lungs, it will always be a temptation. And yet, I'm sad for her in ways I can't fully explain. She's a prisoner of more than just her disease. Her family, poverty, lifestyle choices, the causes are endless. You seem to be... I'm not exactly sure how to state this. In touch with street life around here. Charlie grins, a flash of white against his heavy-set face.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a gang? Criminal organization around here sophisticated enough for counterfeit currency? This raises a brow.
U.S. dollars?
$100 bills, to be exact. The brow rises higher.
That's some fine work. How high quality are you talking?
Very high end. Extremely well done. Charlie takes another sip of his coffee, appears to seriously contemplate the matter.
Aren't you talking special paper, metallic threads, watermarks, all sorts of crazy stuff?
Exactly.
Then no. We got our fair share of crime, and some of these boys, don't let an appetite for violence fool you into thinking they aren't smart. But that kind of technical know-how, specialized equipment, nah, not in a million years.
I nod, share with him what I learned about counterfeiting operations from Lotham. Bills printed in Europe, then sold to middlemen for pennies on the dollar, eventually sold to end users for 65 cents on the dollar.
35% markup,
Charlie deduces, nodding.
Makes sense. Person who spends the money should get the highest percentage as they bear the greatest risk.
He sips more coffee.
End users? Now that I could see around here. Drugs and guns require cash. If some new player arrived and said, I could sell you cheap money, yeah, plenty of players would go for that.
He pauses.
And plenty of other players would kill their sorry asses once they realized they got paid in fake bills. Risky proposition all the way round.
But given the demand,
no pain, no gain, as the saying goes. I imagine at least a few would be willing to try it out.
I lean forward. Any players in particular? Charlie has to think about it.
Can't say off the top of my head, but I can think of a few people to ask.
If it doesn't jam you up,
I don't mind, but I'd like to ask why.
Briefly, I explained to him the counterfeit money discovered in Angelique's lamp, not to mention her friendship with Livia Somdi and Livia's expertise with 3D printers, which may or may not have anything to do with anything, and that Angelique was dressed up as Livia when she disappeared.
You're thinking Livia was the real target?
Maybe. Possibly. When I'm arrogant enough to know what to think.
But then Livia still went missing, and Angelique's still alive.
Yes.
Hell, that doesn't make a damn lick of sense.
Exactly. Charlie drains his coffee mug, waves over the waitress for a refill.
All right, so if Livia was the target, and the girls are still alive?
Angelique smuggled out a message. Help us.
Damn, that's scary. But
Charlie considers the matter.
If the girls are still alive but can't come home, are like held against their will?
I nod.
Then they must be worth something, right? Only reason to keep them alive, because the girls know something or are doing something their captors need.
I like the way he puts that. Simple, logical. The girls know something or are doing something. Which brings us back to Livia's skills with AutoCAD and 3D printing. But that's still not enough for counterfeiting currency, and apparently plastic guns aren't nearly as valuable as we thought. Charlie's turn to nod.
If counterfeiting currency is like advanced math or something, then what about other kinds of forgeries, starting with fake real IDs? Now that would be worth some serious dough.
Explain.
Back in my day, a fake driver's license was a simple matter of prying apart the lamination and inserting a new photo. More recently, I've heard some of the kids at the rec center talk about buying fakes online, especially foreign IDs, say, from Ireland, places like that. You want to sneak into a bar, it gets the job done. But now, with states transitioning to real ID,
which is very sophisticated, right? Watermarks, hidden images, reflective ink. Isn't that why it's now the new standard for TSA?
Exactly. The old model of fake driver's licenses just doesn't cut it. World's getting serious, meaning everyone, including criminals, gotta get serious. I'm not saying faking a real ID would be easy, but compared to forged bills, gotta be a step down.
Charlie shrugs. I think of Angelique showing up at the cyber cafe with a fake ID, then trying to buy a cell phone from the wireless store with the same ID, letting it fall to the ground in her escape. I wonder suddenly if we hadn't missed the obvious. She hadn't been trying to leave us a coded message. The ID itself was the clue. I'll be damned, I mutter.
Not as long as you keep from drinking.
Charlie, are there any new players in town? I don't know, new gangs or criminal enterprises? Even something that seems like a whisper of a ghost story? Kaiser Sose, that sort of thing? Charlie arches a brow.
Street loves a good ghost story, but not that I've heard.
What about a newer gang rising to sudden prominence? A power grab? This takes him longer to consider.
Maybe,
he says at last.
For all the evils in Mattapan, most of our gangs are small, fractured. Got not just blacks versus other blacks, but El Salvadorans versus Asian versus Haitians. Can be a block-by-block sort of thing. Keeps the violence high. Someone is always shooting someone. But also keeps the level of sophistication low. Nobody gets big enough or lasts long enough to do much damage. What are you suggesting?
I don't know what I'm suggesting.
Quality fake IDs. Quality fake money. Or at least access to quality counterfeits.
I wait.
Off the top of my head, I'd say it doesn't have to be a new gang,
he says slowly.
But maybe a traditional player with a new connection. I can do some digging.
Don't put yourself at risk. Charlie glances down at his imposing size.
I've been around a long time, little girl. Grew up in this town. Lived on these streets. Don't you worry about me.
But I do.
Aren't you sweet for a woman who doesn't stick around?
Doesn't mean I'm not sentimental.
Think it means exactly that.
No, I shake my head seriously. I just know how to live with the pain. He doesn't have an answer for that.
You really think these girls, Angelique and Livia, are caught up in some sort of criminal enterprise?
He asks at last. I think Livia was clearly terrified of something. You can see it on her face on the security camera. And the fact that Angelique left her school disguised as her friend, Angelique's been described as a nurturer. Let alone, she clearly had a close relationship with Livia. Maybe a very close relationship. Charlie arches a brow but doesn't say anything. I can imagine Angelique trying to devise a plan to help her friend. Save Livia. Except, I sigh sadly. They're just kids. And you know how it is with teens. They get in trouble first.
Figure out the real danger later.
Charlie finishes for me. Exactly. Whatever usefulness they've had for their captors, I'm wondering if it's nearing an end. Hence, Angelique's desperate attempts at contact, posting a coded message, appearing in the wireless shop. Something's changed. The clock ticking down in a genuinely terrible, dangerous way. Given the two have been missing this long, nothing to stop their captors from disappearing them completely.
Damn,
Charlie mutters.
I'll keep an ear out.
Then, more softly, so only I can hear.
But as long as we're talking danger, you should know I did learn a few things, but it wasn't about them.
It takes me a second. About me?
You're asking too many questions. Your visit today to the Somdi household got people riled up.
Who? And is that why he shot at me?
You need to be more careful, my friend.
Why? If Livia's brother is just some low-level dope dealer, who cares about my visit?
You can get killed for looking wrong around here. Don't trust you're as immune as you think.
I tilt up my chin in an impressive display of false bravado. I'm here to find a missing girl, or girls, as the case may be. I'm going to keep going till that job is done. You can start your own rumor on the streets. They want the skinny white chick to go away, then produce Angelique and Livia. I'll be gone within a matter of hours. On my word.
Doesn't work like that.
Does for me. Charlie smiles, but it's a briefer expression this time. He leans forward.
Watch your back, little lady.
I've been in tough places before.
Not like this.
How do you know?
Because I've been to war, and it still wasn't as scary as living around here.
I don't have an answer to that. I finish my salad. Charlie finishes his coffee. I pay for both of us. Then, despite my protests, Charlie walks me home. Even then, I'm suddenly aware of all the dark shapes around us, noises from side streets, small gatherings in the dark. One kid with a gun,
All it would take. Quick, dirty, effective. Charlie's not wrong about that.
At the side entrance to Stoney's, I kiss my newfound friend on the cheek in gratitude, then retreat upstairs and hole up in the solitude of my apartment. I call Lotham. It's late, but it doesn't surprise me that he picks up immediately.
You should pull the fake ID Angelique dropped yesterday. I have reason to believe the ID itself might be a clue.
A pause. The weight of many unasked questions, such as why did I believe such a thing now, and who might I have been speaking with?
Then, I'll retrieve it from evidence first thing in the morning.
Thank you.
Then, we don't speak. I stay on my puny little flip phone. I listen to him breathe, and it's like knives flaying my skin. The sense of deja vu, the harsh knowledge that this is the only way I know how to connect. All these years later, nothing has changed. I am me, and the rest of the world, the good guys like Paul, like Lotham.
Good night, I say at last, my voice thick. I might be crying, but I don't want to be.
Good night,
he agrees. He ends the call. I sit in my threadbare room, holding my phone against my chest and telling myself